Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, well, welcome to Norm at Night. I had a little, seems I had two clips playing at one time, and I'm, holy cow, I wasn't really sure what was happening. I apologize. You think after all this time and all you faithful listeners out there, I might be able to get it right. Well, we got a lot on the agenda tonight. First of all, of course, what do you think? Did the president do the right thing in bringing the issue of the attack to the Congress? What do you think? And what do you think he should be asking for? I think he should be asking for a declaration of war. Syria is a sovereign state. And to attack a sovereign state, one needs a declaration of war. Let's stop beating around the bush. If we're going to make war, let's declare war. What do you think of that? Give me a call, 347-945-6713. Let me get the chat. Oh, my gosh. Let me try to get the chat room back open. Yeah, there we go. I hope we see the cult. Ah, there's the cult. The cult's still here. I'm really happy about that. Hey, guests. 8416, what do you think? Did the president do the right thing? Question two in that area with Syria. Is this the right thing to do, attacking Syria, that is? And finally, in order to attack Syria, does the president of the United States need the authorization of Congress? I think everyone's pretty clear on my answer to two of those questions. Yes, he did the right thing by going and asking the Congress for authorization to do this. Yes, he has to do that. He doesn't have the power inherent in his office to attack a sovereign nation. That is clearly stated by the Constitution. The power to wage war or to declare war is reserved to the Congress. So if you want to go make war, you got to get the Congress to say you can go make war. Now, if I was a member of the Congress, how would I vote on the resolution? I would vote resoundingly no. Now, if you want to take it up with me on that, the number's 347-945-6713. Plain and simple. Now, whenever we talk about weapons of mass destruction, there's a couple of things that we have to make perfectly clear. Where, now, there is only one nation in the world that has ever used a true weapon of mass destruction in a hostile action against another people. And that's when the United States of America dropped two atomic bombs, one on Hiroshima and the other on Nagasaki. Should the world be afraid of us? I don't know. What do you think? We're the only one that's ever used the weapons. 347-945-6713. And let's ask another very important question. The United States dropped those atomic bombs on Asians. Would the United States have done the same thing if the war in Germany had prolonged? Let's hear your views. 347-945-6713. If you got something to say in the chat room about it, well, just dial us up. I would love to hear it. Uh-oh, we got something going on in the chat room. I see some typing. And is there truly conclusive proof that it was the Assad government that did it? I would like to see some of that proof, and hopefully Churchill wanted to use gas on Germany. Yeah, but he didn't, did he? You know, it's really funny. One man who was gassed during World War One and may have influenced how he acted for the rest of his life was Adolf Hitler. He was actually a war hero. Won the Iron Cross second class, I think. I'm not really sure about it. Yeah, Churchill was a son of a bitch, wasn't he? Somebody in the chat room said that Churchill wanted to use gas on the Germans, but that he was talked out of it because it would have delayed the invasion. Another big, giant use of gas was by the Iraqis in the Iraq-Iranian war that took place in the 80s. Tens of thousands of people died. Did Saddam make that gas? No, he didn't. He went out on the open market, and he bought it. You know who he bought it from, don't we all? Yes, sir, Bob. He bought it from Uncle Sam, from the good old United States of America. The same gas he used on the Iranians, the same gas he used on his own people, he bought that right here in the good old U.S. of A. And we couldn't get over there fast enough to give it to him as long as he was killing Iranians. So, we got to be real careful when we go throwing these gas stones. Oh, excuse me. Come on, somebody give me a call, 347-945-6713, so we can have a little conversation here instead of listening it to me all my way. Oh, boy. It's late tonight. It's late. You know, who knows? Maybe someday. Let's see. In November, we may just get a call at about 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow back to the Norm at Night show. Yes, the call would come on Wednesday. That would be kind of fun. And I'm hoping to hear that. But anyway, I need somebody to talk to. I can't just talk myself. And I want to talk this Syria thing to death, if you would. Let's see what's going on in the Washington Post about this. Well, who cares about Syria, really, right? The NFL starting Sunday. House leaders back Obama on Syria strike. House Speaker Boehner says he will support the president and encourage his colleagues to do the same. That's really interesting. I haven't agreed with Boehner this whole year. Looks like I'm going to agree or disagree with Boehner again. Oh, boy. Excuse me. Polls show that most of the public, like me, they oppose the strike. Wow. The college drinking problem. Yeah, maybe we can talk about that on the show. Oh, my God. Oof. You know what? Well, there's this, just to go off topic a little bit, if you want to talk about drinking, you can join in here. This article starts out, the tradition of excess drinking is alive and well, but there are new varieties, energy drinks, prescription use, and social media are testing schools' ability to keep the students safe. The overwhelming 99.9% of students in college are adults. They don't need to be kept safe. It is their responsibility to keep themselves safe. There, I said it. Wow. So what do we know on Syria? Come on, folks. Here's another interesting article. Yeah, I had a tough day at school today. Painting walls, running to the Home Depot, working with parents, working with students, making printers work. It was a damn hard day today. I am a little bit. Tomorrow I got to make a projector work. Oh, man. Oh, boy. Anyway, let me see. Maybe somebody has tried to call. Still no calls in the Norm at Night. Not a whole lot of 8416 guests. Why don't you give us a call? 347-945-6713. I'm really pooped. So what do you think? Should we attack Syria? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer. week from tomorrow is 9/11. I mean, let's face it. The government in Syria is fighting the people who attacked us on 9/11. And anybody who doesn't understand that isn't really, I don't think, paying very close attention to the news. We want to attack the people who are fighting the people who attacked us on 9/11. And we want to attack those people because they use the same weapons that we sold to Saddam Hussein to use against the Iranians. This is complex business. Hey, here's a call coming in. Go ahead, you're on with Norm. You're on with Norm, go ahead. Come on. What's going on here? You're on with Norm, go ahead.
Oh, you found the mute button, did you?
I did.
Okay. Now, who's our only ally in the Syria adventure? Only ally, right now.
We have one right now.
Right now. Not the British.
The Brits pulled the French.
The Brits? All we got is France, right?
Right. The French are pissed because Syria got their independence from France.
Who's the first country to ever use gas in World War One?
I would say it was the Germans, but it...
No.
It was the French.
Yeah.
Well,
in fact,
one of the guys they passed did a little jig outside the railroad car when the next war came along.
Well, I'm only concerned now with the use of gas because, with the exception of the concentration camps, gas wasn't used in World War II. Well, except by the Japanese. They were freaking animals. The shit they dropped on
the nuclear device on them and just melted them. But we're
I understand all that. But I know now the Japanese would sort of cordon off an entire village of Chinese, and then drop whatever. These were experiments, biological, chemical. They just, no regard for human life.
The running joke at Treblinka was 45 minutes from railroad to air.
Yeah, well, no, I understand all that, but, I don't like to give... I don't let everyone off the hook. I know what the German situation was. I know what the Japanese situation was. But if you can't, in fact, the French, this is the screwy part. They gassed Arabs and Palestinians outside of Damascus.
And now when did they do this?
After World War One. Well, the war was nearly over.
That's right. Syria became a French protectorate under the League of Nations.
Right. Well, you had all of these Arabs who had fought, with Lawrence of Arabia and fought for the British, and they had an agreement to get a homeland, which would have been Palestine. Well, we know how that went.
Yeah, the old Balfour Declaration. We sure do know how that went.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, that was the French solution to the Arab problem. I've heard numbers as high as 10,000 people or soldiers.
Were killed?
So, yes.
Gassing, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, I know I've read it, and I'm looking to verify the exact details, but I know it did happen in Syria and within the area of somewhere around Damascus, anyway.
Why are a French gas attack Syria after WW1. Let's see what comes up. Syria, Wikipedia. Oh, oh no, that's later. Chemical weapons, World War One. Doesn't have anything. Let's see what this Wikipedia article says. The modern state of Syria.
And now, here's another site who now claims poison gas is used for the first time by Germans. but it doesn't look like a legitimate site. I don't know what that is. Yeah, German commanders had very little faith in gas. They didn't think it was worth using. Well, it wasn't effective. Even today, it's not all effective. Except that we developed that system of bomblets, similar to cluster bombs. But now the bomblets contain the gas, and then the gas spreads, and it's not affected by the explosion. So it gets, because that was the whole problem with gas, was that it was very difficult to have a delivery system. Excuse me. Even today, I mean, it's not, you want to call it a WMD, and let's face it, it's nothing comparable to nuclear weapons. I mean, I don't see where gas is, causes mass destruction. Of course, if I were a child in the suburbs of Damascus, I would probably disagree, but Yeah. Well, you've heard the other things about how the Syrians obtained the raw ingredients.
How they obtained what?
How they obtained the raw ingredients to make their gas.
No, how did they do that? Let's cite some sources here.
Let's go to Britain. Where'd all that fluoride come from? Potassium fluoride and sodium fluoride, the basic ingredients of sarin. They started selling it to the Syrians in January of this year. I mean, just so you want to know where how these things happen, like we don't have any involvement. Yes, I know. At this point, it's difficult to trust any government at all. I swear, we can say what we want about it. Was it just a profit motive or what? But didn't we do the same thing with Iraq, right?
With Iraq? Heck, we sold them more gas than Sunoco sells on Sunday in summer.
Yeah, well, we sold them all the stuff, and they knew how to make it, and it's not a complex procedure.
Nobody said a word when they were using it against the Iranians.
Yeah. Well, there were some issues there because, at first we thought, oh, wow, Iraq will kick butt on Iran. And then when they really started to do it, and we thought the Iraqis were actually going to win, then we thought, that's going to create an imbalance in the region. So that's when Iran-Contra started. because all of the Iranian armaments, especially their air force, they had nothing but American jets, all left over from the Shah. But they needed parts. They needed to keep this thing working. So we started selling them parts. So we were on both sides of the conflict. It was, you know, that's the, you know, and I've said it before.
Place to be.
Yeah, well, the thing with the Middle East is, first, politicians have not been very well informed and have not been the people who determined foreign policy. A lot of that was all just the CIA was trying to, you know, do whatever they were trying to do, balance this and make this whatever. It was schizophrenic. There's no other way to describe it. So see, if I'm an Arab, or let's just say I'm you know, Muslim, Islamic, whatever, because they're not all Arabs, of course. I'm looking at the United States, you know, like a crazy brother-in-law. I got this schizo guy hanging around in my house, and he's not taking his meds. And that's the United States. All right?
I'm listening.
Because none of it makes any goddamn sense. Neither does it. I mean, the serious thing is, one, look at Libya. You go, oh, well, these people are fighting for their freedom, and they're going to topple the dictator and set up a democracy. Yeah, and then I'm watching this guy with a bayonet sticking it in and out of Gaddafi's ass. Oh, this is the guy. Oh, he's our hero here, isn't he? Oh, yeah. And then the other crap obviously with the ambassador and that, but I mean, you know, what did you do there? You took what was a stable government, even though it was a dictatorship, and you turned it into, you know, just bedlam. Every crazy in the world.
What do you think of all this? Join in the conversation. 347-945-6713.
You know, do we want to draw a parallel with Egypt? Okay, you had Mubarak. Things were working. I mean, you had to pay him a ton of money. But he wasn't going to invade Egypt. And he kept the far right, the fundamentalists, under control.
He wasn't going to invade Israel.
Yeah, well, no, he would, you know. No, we were paying him a couple of billion dollars a year not to do that. Do the same thing with Jordan. If I'm not mistaken, Egypt and Jordan are like within our top three or four countries for foreign aid. In fact, we've spent something like $75 billion on Egypt alone. You see what we got for it. And now what's Jordan going to be? 2 million refugees they can't feed. And we've already got troops there trying to distribute food.
Nobody wants the Palestinians. Arabs don't want them. Jews don't want them. Nobody wants them.
Yeah, well, they're pretty much just going to have to stay where they are, and they'll be under Israeli domination for well beyond my lifetime. I don't know how long that'll last, you know. Yeah, I kind of wonder, too, I'm trying to think how far back it was when the Israelis were using white phosphorus on the Gaza Strip. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, nobody said anything, but nobody in the West said anything. And what would we call white phosphorus? What would that be? Is that chemical warfare?
I don't know. You tell me. You seem
it's
to be the expert in this area.
It's a chemical.
let's change the angle here a little bit.
Okay.
So should Obama be going to Congress to ask for a declaration of war?
Yeah. He's trying to legitimize this thing. He knows it's illegal everywhere. Whether it's the UN
right,
or the Constitution, it's illegal.
What if he asked for a declaration of war?
Well, I'm glad he's doing this. I mean, because it hasn't happened
know,
in a hell of a long time.
What is he doing? He's about to attack a sovereign nation. He was going to make it a Pearl Harbor-like attack.
Yeah.
So now he's going to Congress.
Well,
I'm not sure the Congress can say, okay, two strikes a day for a week. I don't think they can do that. I think it's all in when you start killing people.
Yeah, well, you know, he's looking for some legitimacy. And it's not there. I mean, the UN has already said any unilateral attack would be illegal in their eyes.
Well, you know, that doesn't matter here.
Well, no,
Well, here's the question, and it goes past Syria.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe the president is commander-in-chief till war has been declared.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's got his War Powers Act, which gives him, what, the 30-day window?
Which is a law
that should have been challenged long ago as being unconstitutional.
Yes, but U.S. troops have not... The War Powers Act rests on the idea that American lives are in danger and U.S. troops, citizens, or possessions have been attacked by a non-sovereign force.
Right. Well, the thing is, like anything else, these things get reinterpreted to the point where they're so distorted, they don't make sense anymore.
See, I think it's really pretty clear. Let me just... I'm going to go to the exact words.
Oh, you can go. You can do that, but that's not what they're going to follow. Any more than they follow the Second Amendment or the First Amendment. They don't follow them to the letter. No way.
Let's see. Constitution of the United States. Okay. I don't want amendments. Visit the Constitution in person? What is this crap?
Okay.
Well, I'm going to have to go to a different website because I don't understand this one. U.S. Constitution. Maybe this one will be better. Section 1. Legislative powers. Let's first look at presidential powers here. The president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into actual service of the United States.
Uh-huh.
He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices. Okay, he shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided 2/3 of the senators concur. He shall nominate, blah, 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 Justice Supreme Court and other officers of the United States. The president shall have the power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess appointments. He shall from time to time, yeah, he makes a State of the Union. Not in one place did I even have a hint that he had the power to make war. Now, let's take a look at the legislative powers. Okay, the House of Representatives, all legislative powers are, very cool. Section 3, the Senate, no person shall be a senator. Section 4, the Congress shall assemble once every year. Each house shall judge its own elections. It's always been a kick.
Yeah.
All bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. Section 8. The Congress shall have the power. Now, this is a big section. This says, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imports, and excises, to pay the debt, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. The Congress can borrow money on the credit of the United States. They can regulate commerce, establish a uniform rule of naturalization, conduct regulate commerce with foreign nations, coin money, regulate the value, fix the standards of weights and measures, provide for the punishment of counterfeiting, establish post offices and post roads, promote the sciences and useful arts, whatever those are, define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas. To declare war, grant letters of marque. I wonder how many people know what one of those is. Actually, what a letter of marque is, for those of you out there who are wondering, it's a signed letter from the President of the United States giving a private ship the right to act as a warship of the United States. Raise and support armies. But that budget can't be for longer than 2 years. Provide and maintain the Navy. Call forth the militia. Seems to me like the Constitution's clear about this. Mr. President, you want to go attack Syria, you better come to Congress and ask us to exercise our war-making power.
All right. Well, you know, we've had it, since 1941, and there have been, it's been extended, or the powers have increased since then.
If Congress votes no on this resolution, and he goes ahead anyway,
that would be very interesting. Yeah, I think
he should. He said he's going to do it. He should be arrested if he does that.
Yeah, and here's the thing: whether a destroyer is in a military theater or it's a fighter plane in the sky, these are American troops in a combat area in imminent danger. So no matter how he does, they can talk about surgical strikes and this and that, but, it's still war. It's war no matter what, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to work out. I think that the reason Obama is, throwing this ball back to Congress is simply that they did the polls and they know where the public is on this. And now there were polls that showed it at almost a 50-50 ratio. But some new ones that have come out, it's more like 60-30 with 10% undecided. I think that was the Washington Post poll. So I do think there's nothing popular about this at all. And if I know anything about Obama, his decisions are based on polls. That's it. You know, there's no conscience here. So, oh, this is kind of interesting. I'm at the New York Times site on the War Powers Act. The act, however, does not specify what Congress can do if the president refuses to comply with the act. Congress could presumably suspend all funds and override a presidential veto, but I don't know. That would be interesting, too, huh? You still there?
Yes.
Okay, well, your silence, you know, obviously gives me a different impression. Well, when I'm done talking, I'm quiet, right?
Well, anyway, so, you're a military commander. Congress votes no. Your commanding U.S. has Nimitz, and you get the orders, launch the strikes. What do you do? What if you say no?
Well, one, I'm getting an illegal order. I would be fully justified to just disobey. Say, no, I'm not doing that, sir. You don't have authorization. I mean, that's what I would do, but, you know.
Oh, wow.
It's hard to say what an actual commander would do. I don't know.
Well, that's what we hung the guys at Nuremberg for not doing.
The
Germans didn't establish the Nuremberg Principle. We did.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the thing. You know, what I was getting to earlier, you know, the influence of public opinion is very strong. That's in the background of this. And you better know that every congressman, you know, senator or representative, is scouring his district to find out how they feel. Because this is the kind of stuff that worries them. You know, and especially, you know, and I'm thinking like Pelosi's on his side. I'm like, God, her district her district couldn't be more anti-war. I mean, these people are born pinkos. I mean, they are.
Born pinkos.
I mean, they're, you know, I mean, we're talking the Bay Area in here. It's, I think a lot of the liberals, I would say far left, is not going to support. And on the other end, far right, and there I would say the libertarian camp, they're definitely not going to support it. At least in the Senate, they are going to have to get enough votes to avoid a filibuster. Because Rand Paul has already hinted
that he's going to filibuster?
He's hinting, yes. So I like that.
I don't think the bill should be filibustered.
Well, if he can do it, go for it.
It's what happens if I don't even know what happens if it passes one house and fails the other.
Then it doesn't pass.
Yeah, but how do you go about fixing that?
Well, there's nothing to fix. We have our procedures. We followed them. We made our votes, and the votes are no.
Yeah, but if one house votes yes, the other house votes no, do they have a conference?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be incredible meetings going on and on the next week or so, or half a week?
You know, that's a real interesting question. I don't remember the answer.
Yeah.
You build for the conference if it fails one house, or only if different versions pass in each house.
Yeah, well, I guess they can work on it. He may get some modified version of it. Who knows, really? I mean, this isn't some place we've been before.
Well, and then, I mean,
this
I think it's a
new.
Real
serious. This is very
can,
new.
Can the Congress pass a session that said, or yes, you can attack Syria for a week?
Well, yeah, or selected targets, you know.
And what's
going
to happen when they shoot down a couple of planes?
That's precisely the point.
Grab a couple of pilots.
Of course, I'm thinking bigger than that. I don't know. Do you know how many thousands of missiles the Syrians have? A lot.
I don't have any idea.
A lot.
You mean if the Syrians start lobbing missiles into Israel?
No. Why the hell would they do that? I'm talking about those destroyers.
Oh, you mean the American ships?
Yeah. That's who's attacking. Why would they attack Israel?
What if they get a real lucky shot and put the Nimitz at the bottom of the Red Sea?
Well, you know, I mean, I understand that these ships have better defense systems than they used to. But, you know, you can be overwhelmed. And it doesn't take much. One of these damn things come through your deck, and guess what? It's going to hit your munitions or your fuel. Doesn't matter which.
Well, that's
and you're gone.
I think it was the Prince Eugen sent the hood down with one shot.
Oh, yeah. Well, the HMS Sheffield. That was the first one to go.
That went down in the Balkans War.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody saw that coming. So, I mean, I'm sorry for laughing at that, but it is something that we should consider. We lose a couple ships there, it doesn't matter at all. You aren't making any gains. I mean, you've lost three ships full of sailors.
Well,
and it's just wrong. It's just freaking wrong.
If the Syrians put one ship at the bottom, it's a full-blown war from that point on.
Well, on the other hand, we're provoking. We're the aggressor.
But it doesn't matter if they send a ship to the bottom.
Well, I understand, but, you know, we don't have the forces to go there. You're going to need a freaking draft to get an army that can go to Syria. There'd be no other way. And the one thing I want to say about Obama, I've been since he got reelected and all that. That man has shot himself in the foot. How many times now? I mean, it's endless. You know, it's one screw up after another.
So maybe he's not a very good president.
Yeah, well, I can't say his first 4 years were what they were. You know, and he got some things done that he wanted to. But now it's like insane. It's every week one more blunder. So I don't know what to say. I mean, I thought he was reasonably competent in his first few years, but now it's like there's nothing going on. There's nothing going right.
I'm really surprised that Secretary of State, why can't I think of his name suddenly?
Oh, Kerry?
Secretary of State Kerry. I don't understand how he cannot resign. I mean,
After all that anti-war crap that, you know, that he's known for, to be doing what he's doing now. Now, let me get to, I put a couple statements on my page here. Okay, here we go. Here's a quote from me. Okay? We must have war so we can have peace. Now, here's a quote from Norman Solomon. War becomes perpetual when it is used as a rationale for peace. And then we've got all the presidents. We've got Johnson's Vietnam, Clinton's Bosnia and Kosovo, Reagan's Beirut and Grenada, Bush Sr., Panama, Iraq, and Somalia, Bush Jr., Iraq and Afghanistan, and then we have Obama with Libya and Syria. So what have I done now? I've given you like 30, 40 years a perpetual war. A little Orwellian, I think, huh?
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, how do we stop these guys from just...
This is really good now. This is Obama... this was October 2nd, 2002. This was just before the Iraq invasion, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this is Obama's words. Now, let me be clear. I suffer no illusions about Saddam Hussein. He is a brutal man, a ruthless man, a man who butchers his own people to secure his own power. He has repeatedly defied UN resolutions, thwarted UN inspection teams, developed chemical and biological weapons, and coveted nuclear capacity. He's a bad guy. The world and the Iraqi people would be better off without him. But here's the key sentence now. But I also know that Saddam poses no imminent and direct threat to the United States.
The irony is, it's true.
Yeah, I know. Well, tell me why Assad is any different. Yes, and obviously we know that. But, you know, you can go through all the things he and Kerry have said in the past, and it's exact opposite. They have no shame, no integrity.
No, they don't.
They don't believe in anything except power. That's who they are. These are our leaders.
So what are we supposed to do?
We do find some of them. I mean, I find the occasional former politician. Actually, they're usually not politicians. They're usually bureaucrats. You know, I mean, the only guy who makes sense in the Democratic camp right now is Robert Reich. And you got me siding with Robert Reich. That's like crazy. But he makes sense, and the other no one else does.
I don't know.
I can pick a bunch of others, but again, they're not politicians, you know. So I don't know. I mean, these are guys that probably would never run for office, even on the right. You know, you've got, you know, intellectual. I guess that's the thing. These are people who are academic, you know, and they're in a position where they can more or less say what they want. They aren't influenced. They don't have to raise money to maintain their office. They aren't being lobbied by foreign governments every day, or corporations, whichever. So they have that freedom. But yeah, what kind of government? It's not like a
old
another...
men quarrel and young men die.
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know,
I can't remember who said that.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that. the variations of it.
Quarrel and young men start to die.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I always thought it would be good just to send those guys out there, you know, give them all a sword or something and put them in an arena and let's watch the war. You know, let's you guys do this. God. Yeah, I don't know what to say, Norm. You know.
Well, there is nothing left to say. I mean, I don't know. The interesting thing is that, well, whatever you think out there in Radio Land, whether you think the Congress should authorize it, the Congress shouldn't authorize it, you have two senators and one representative. You owe them a letter.
Yep. Yeah,
needs to speak on this issue.
Yeah, you know, the one thing about this potential war, and I don't know if it's one of them or both of them. I don't know if the Saudi Arabian tail is wagging the American dog, or the Israeli tail is wagging the American dog, or is it both?
Or does the American dog even have a tail?
Well, whatever he's... Well, maybe they got him by the balls. I don't... Whatever
the
they're wagging.
Yeah,
they're
maybe
wagging.
They got him by the doobies.
It could be that, yeah. But I know that when things like
this
occur...
What if it starts getting ugly? You know, when we sink some Russian ships in Damascus Harbor.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of potential for various things here. You know, what we had an Iranian ship there just last year, didn't we?
Yeah, well, what if the Chinese get mad because their oil pipelines, I mean, well, not pipelines itself, but...
Yeah, well, they, you know, they're rather
the
distant than they really... Yeah, I don't expect China to get involved at all in this. You know, one, they got no navy to speak of, and they're as dependent on us as we are on them. Now, the Russians...
They come through the Khyber... Wait. They come through the Khyber Pass and start taking over parts of India and Pakistan.
Oh... Do you really
it's happened
think...
in the last 50 years, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, I don't
all
think
right,
they
all
would.
Right,
last I don't
word.
Think
I'm...
they'll attack
wait,
two
wait,
nuclear
wait, wait. Cole,
states simultaneously. Okay.
Cole, I'm giving you the last word. We got 40 seconds. Go.
Okay, well, I hope the best happens, but I'm not optimistic. That's all I can say.
Okay. My last words to you are call your senators and representatives and urge them to vote no. But if you want to urge them to vote yes, that's better than not writing at all. Do not be a silent lump on this. I believe we need to follow Britain's lead. And anyway, the last 10 seconds, this is Norman Knight coming to you live for another week from Bowie, Maryland. And I'll see you next week. See you, big cult. I'll see you next week, cult.
Take care, man. Good night.
We're out of here. Bye-bye.